Okay, we'll go ahead and get started. So many of you know this is one of two oral volunteered sessions we have in Division A-10 for bioenergy and bioindustrial systems. There's a number of symposia that have been going on here as well. I think at this point there's one symposium left, and that's tomorrow afternoon, which is sort of a wrap-up of all the symposia sessions. So that's number 277 in your program. If you're interested, I'd encourage all of you to try to attend. We're hoping to really have some good discussion at that session. Okay, so for this afternoon, we have four talks lined up, and first talk will be given by David Bransby of Auburn University, and he's going to talk to us about a very unique topic, 20-year biomass yields for switchgrass varieties in Alabama.
Thank you, Mike. It is unique in some ways, so let me go right ahead. And our objective, obviously, is to tell you about the study, long-term biomass yields of 8 switchgrass varieties in Alabama, and also to determine the effects. This has given us some unique opportunity to look at the effect of rainfall and age of stand on yield of these different varieties. I might point out that this 20-year aspect was not by design, it was by procrastination that I never got to publish the data, and so I thought, well, let's just keep this thing going, and in no time I discovered we had 20 years of data. This picture here is of switchgrass. It's on the National Renewable Energy website. A lot of people pull it off and use it to show in their presentations, use it to show what switchgrass looks like, and I'm kidding them, go up to them afterwards and say, who gave you permission to use a picture of me in your PowerPoint presentation? They say, no, I didn't do that. And so I show this one, and the same guy, same plant 20 years later. Just shows that if you work with switchgrass for 20 years, change the color of your hair. Anyway, it's hard to believe that it was a little over 20 years that I emigrated from South Africa. But what we did here was we were looking at varieties, and just by the way, background, and Mike, unless we have a second speaker, I will take up a bit more time. By the way of background, I showed up from South Africa as an immigrant, was asked to pick up this work at Auburn, and we were subcontractors to Oak Ridge National Lab, and all the subcontractors were using Cavan Rock. And I went and looked at a little crops garden that our forage agronomists had planted, and saw Alamo switchgrass standing there almost twice as tall as Cavan Rock, and I called Oak Ridge and said, we got the wrong variety. No, we had the right variety. And I said, but you're using the same variety in Alabama as you use in New York, and we don't do that for any, not one single crop. Well, we're going to stay with Cavan Rock. So that was the background to putting this test in. The varieties we had were Alamo and Candler, the lowland varieties, and then the upland varieties were Cavan Rock, Blackwell, Summer, Trailblazer, and Pathfinder, Kansas native. So we put these out in 1989, planted them in a randomized complete block design, 4 reps, 8 varieties, 32 plots, standard sort of average application of nitrogen annually. Plots were harvested in July and October, twice a year, which is not what I'd recommend anymore for Alamo, but it tends to favor the upland varieties because they mature earlier than the lowland varieties. Differences among varieties were tested using Turkey Kramer procedures of SAS, and responses to age and rainfall were determined by multiple regression analysis. So let's take a look then first at the average yields. Alamo came out pretty much on top and significantly different from Candler. And I'm talking about average, and you'll see in a minute that, especially with respect to these two varieties, the average doesn't mean a whole lot because there was a huge variation over time. We'll come back, and then Cavan Rock was the best, still the best upland type, bearing in mind that we understand, you know, these other varieties were actually developed for forage quality rather than biomass yield. But anyway, so there was a very, very distinct difference then between the two upland lowland varieties and the six upland varieties. And here is a picture that actually partially explains that. This is Alamo here, a plot of Alamo. And on March 7th in 2007, and these are all the upland varieties around it. Haven't even started to think about growing yet, and Alamo's moving along already. So it's a much longer growing season that contributes partly to their higher yield. Here's the graph of raw data of yield over time. This here, the red line, is Alamo, and you can see an incredible, of course this scared the life out of me, after we got unusually high yields in the second year, and this is all we reporting yields from the second year onwards, unusually high yields there, and it just kept on dropping, and I thought, well, where's it going to go? Well, it then turned around and came almost back up to the same level, and then since has dropped around, but dropped up and down since that time. Here is Canlow, sort of intermediate, and then all the rest, these are the upland varieties. Now, I'll come back to that in a minute, but when we did the multiple regression, age and age of the stand and rainfall were not significant factors for either Alamo or Canlow. But age was significant for all, and we did this separately by variety. It was significant, age was significant for all the upland varieties and all but one, and rainfall was significant for all but one of the upland varieties. So let's just quickly look at it. Because of this, we threw all the upland varieties into one analysis, and that's partly why we've got such a lot of noise here, but still a very definite increase of yield with rainfall, and also of yield with age. And if you go back to this, you can actually see looking at the raw data that the yields increased steadily with time, and a lot of the noise here is a result of rainfall. This one being, of course, the notorious 2007 100-year drought that we had in Alabama. So just to wrap up that story then, switchgrass, you know, the economists often tell us, okay, we'll use 10 years and as a stand life, and we don't even know about that in some cases, and we'll amortize over 10 years. Well, I believe our data show that switchgrass will last at least 20 years and probably be indefinite. If bear in mind, we were cutting twice a year here, which puts more stress on the plant than cutting just once a year. And at least for the lowland varieties, I would recommend cutting only once a year. Now, because while two cuts a year gives you slightly higher yield, that higher yield doesn't bring in enough income to pay for you to get your equipment out a second time to harvest. So once a year cutting, like I said, is suitable for the lowland varieties, which are best adapted to our southeastern region. And two, I just remind you that I think that the two-cut system that we used in this test favored the upland varieties. And so if you went with a one-cut system, the difference would be much larger. That's just my guess. Alamo was the most productive of the eight varieties. That's not to say there are not better varieties out there now. Ceres has come out with some new varieties, and so there may well be more productive varieties than Alamo, but in this study, Alamo was definitely the best. Approximately 65, and I didn't focus on this, 65 to 70% of the total annual yield was obtained in the first harvest, again showing that you're coming back, you're only picking up a little over 30% in your second harvest. So especially for Alamo, it doesn't pay to do that. In general, yield of upland varieties increased with age of stand and rainfall, but yield of lowland varieties did not. Now, okay, so the big question is, what did cause that huge variation in the yields of the lowland varieties that I showed you there, and my answer is I don't know. We looked at several factors. We looked at I thought maybe the date of the last frost might affect it. In other words, occasionally, you know, we'll have a warm period in the winter and growth will start on those lowland varieties, and then we get a late frost and it kills everything and we've got to start again. Well, when we put date of last frost into the multiple regression analysis, it did not show as being a significant factor. So I have no idea what caused that variation. I would like to know, but there was nothing that we could think of that that caused that. It was there and kind of tricky to deal with. Well, that's it, and I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Take any questions, if you have any questions.
About growing degree drapes, did you try any variables like that to account for temperature?
We didn't, and maybe that's something that we should do. I guess the tricky thing is that all of these darn things are confounded, and I suspect that often our growing degree days are going to be, negatively related to rainfall. I may not be correct there, but this year, and I haven't got the yields from this year, but this year has been another tough drought year down there. But that 2007, I would expect that because your temperatures are higher, and yet that year the rainfall was low. So who knows, it may be negatively related to growing degree days down there. Any other points, questions?
So that precipitous decline in the yield of alumol over the first 6 or 7 or 8 years, no theories.
I have no idea, Mike, and that's concerning. We didn't notice. We watched it pretty closely, and we didn't notice anything like that. And
so what happened to the ground cover or stand coverage in the plot during that time? Did you see gradual thinning during that time?
There was no evidence of that, although we didn't monitor it. And there could well be. You noticed when I showed you that photograph, it was very, very large. That was just a couple of years ago, 2007. And so Alamo is very, very much a bunch grass, whereas the upland types do have short rhizomes, and there may have been something like that some type of thinning, and then the remaining plants becoming very, very robust. Because we have plants there in a nursery that were spaced initially, and the crowns of those plants are this size now. I think once it stabilizes, I think the yield is remarkably insensitive to density, but it may have been a density issue early on.
See, what I would think would be real interesting to do is to go into those Alamo plots right now and harvest the seed on those and grow out the progeny in comparison to the original variety.
Yeah.
To see whether there's actually been a genetic shift. With all the mortality.
We don't have any seed of that. We don't have any of that 20-year-old seed. Question here.
Is there possibly any cumulative effects from P and K fertilization or even liming?
We did all of that on a fairly regular basis. You know, we did P and K soil measurements about every 3 years and applied it. And they, surprisingly enough, the plots didn't need very much. We have done, Wes Wood has done some root work on those plots, and the darn roots go down. Well, our auger went down 10 feet, and there were roots at 10 feet down, and probably obviously deeper than that, but our auger couldn't go any deeper than that. So that's what makes it so drought tolerant, is that, you know, we never come out of the winter with a soil moisture deficit. We've always got field capacity coming out of the winter in the southeast. And so the switchgrass has access to water with its roots already down there, has access to water for a long time, even if you get zero rain. So, it's been an interesting study.
Thank you. David?
We got
a few seconds?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Thanks again, David.